Yes, good morning. Are you still listening to CKW? Hello and welcome to Wooden Spoons on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. My name is Ugo Nachibo and I'm here with community nutritionist Mary Jane Eason. We are here to discuss topics of healthy living, environmental issues, what's going on in our community, as well as other interests in this 1 hour show. On Wooden Spoons, we recognize that all things are related, and with learning and awareness, we connect the dots that make up our world. Every Friday morning on Wooden Spoons, we speak with guests on today's relevant issues, share nutritious topics and recipes, and explore important topics with perspectives not found in the mainstream media. The time right now is 8:01 a.m. and the temperature is 15 degrees. Pretty windy out there. Good morning, Mary Jane.
Good morning, Ugana. Yeah, speaking of windy, it was more than windy. It was a gale. It was an absolute storm. I was waiting, trying to cross Portage Avenue, and I was really afraid, and because the wind almost pushed me down right on the side of the sidewalk. And then all of a sudden, there was a bit of a lull, and I managed to cross Portage Avenue while there was a lull. And so hopefully when I get back to go back to where I come from, to the school, I hope that there will be another lull. It was amazing.
Yeah, those winds are pretty scary out there.
It was a gale.
Yeah, yeah, probably about like according to this, it says 62 kilometer wind gusts. Mm-hmm. So be careful.
Yes, well, you have to be careful. I mean, how, you know, like, what do? You can't grab on a tree in the middle of the street. You know what I mean?
right.
But it's totally dangerous. And this is, I guess you could call it climate change happening. There's a lot of disruption in the world.
Yeah.
Ups and downs. And it has a lot to do with human activity and, you know, things that we are doing to the environment. So these are sort of some very harsh wake-up calls, perhaps. Anyway, I'm here, and I'd just like to acknowledge that we are located on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional land and waters of the Innu Cree, the Anishinaabe Ojibwe, and the Ojibwe Cree, Dakota and Dene people, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. We acknowledge the Shoal Lake No. 40 First Nation and its territory for our life-giving water. So this morning, I approached Climate Change Manitoba, and Climate Action Team in Manitoba, about discussing there was an article in the Uniter, and it's all about these AI data centers that are going to be developed in Manitoba. And one area that is happening at the moment is going to be Île de Chien in Manitoba, rural area of Manitoba. Mm. Where vast amounts of acreage are going to be taken, and they're going to be used for the development of these AI data centers. This is a very controversial thing, and it's certainly something that needs to be discussed. And I contacted Climate Action Manitoba, and James Wilt was the person that I was referred to, and so I sent him some questions, and I have not heard back. So now I'm not quite sure exactly what is transpiring. And do we see any sign that he has showed up on this screen? as our guest?
No. I don't know if he was sent a Zoom link. We can try calling him. Do we have a number for him?
I don't think I have the number. I don't believe so, because I didn't. I just had an email, and let's see. Yeah, I don't have the number right here.
Okay, we'll be back.
Okay, so what I think I will just do, I will just try to to bring out, to provide some information about this situation. So James Wild, he is the policy manager of Climate Action Team Manitoba. And so I learned about the situation, about the AI being developed from the University of Winnipeg Uniter newspaper. And normally I take the newspaper, I get a copy from the University of Winnipeg and I take it home, but I guess I must have not read the last one I took home. So the Uniter published an article about the development of AI sites in Manitoba, titled "The Fight for a Non-Artificial Prairie." AI data center's potential impact on Manitoba. That this may not seem exceptional news, except for the fact that someone who happens to be living in the area of the proposed site started a petition to oppose this development. A petition is being circulated, but I have not seen it. Rather, the information came to me by word of mouth, beginning with a board member of Mary Jane's Cooking School who referred me to Linda Tronel, a former minister at Crossways and Common, who then sent me information on the petition and the issues involved, which referred to Climate Action Team Manitoba. And so that's how I came to contact Climate Action Team Manitoba, explained the situation. The person that I contacted said to please send the same information to James Wild, who works there. Now, I also have a nephew who lives in the Île-de-Chêne area and has become involved. And I will be talking to him. Well, I have talked to him already. We had a discussion about this. So he has agreed that he will be happy to, as far as I understand, I know he goes to work, but he may likely be a guest on our radio program next week to discuss this issue of these AI data centers. So I guess I will have to just go forward with this information that I can share. And I'll just sort of follow what I was hoping to discuss. Where did the proposed development for an AI data center originate? I think that I'm not sure where it originated, but I think that there was some communication between, I'm just going to see what I have here. Okay, so there was a woman that lived in the Île-de-Chêne area, and she lives across the road from the proposed AI data center site near Île-de-Chêne, and she started started this petition. And Christy Little has lived there for 20 years, but plans that she won't stay there if the data center goes up. And this information, I guess, came to her on March the 31st. Roughly 15 kilometers south of Winnipeg's Perimeter Highway sits a 350-acre plot of land about as common as any other rural Manitoba field. It is an open parcel used for the typical modern industrial farming economy that supports nearly 3,500 direct jobs and many more indirect lives across the province. This half section of land is at the center of a highly contested debate around the development of artificial intelligence data centers in Manitoba. Are you familiar, Ugana, with artificial intelligence and how it is used and so on?
Yeah, I sort of am. You know, I think when I was an instructor here briefly, we kind of discussed the use of AI in the classwork. So students who, you know, did use AI to, like, summarize their papers or use AI in their research. We just have to make sure that they do cite their sources, right? And to use AI more as a tool rather than relying on AI. I use AI, you know, in my regular daily routines, mostly, you know, for the odd, you know, question, you know, what's the easiest way to bake banana bread, for example, you know, and then AI spits out an easy recipe. And I've seen different people use AI for a number of reasons. So AI, you know, once again, it's a tool, you know, that people could use.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you're using AI. So do you see there's... So if you can use it, why would they want to build a data center? Like, why would that be so important to have this thing developed?
Yeah. Well... AI, you know, uses a lot of resources. You know, in some instances, it does use up water or it uses up land. and, you know, building this infrastructure, some would argue, you know, it's a way to cater to a wider audience, you know, since more people are going to be using AI in the future and they would like AI to be more accessible, you know, hence why they are trying to expand more, right? There's also going to be an opposing side to the rule, which is that these building of these physical structures, you know, deplete resources as well.
They definitely do. What I was reading is that there have been AI centers in Phoenix, the United States, and a number of places in which they've been depleted of their water, and they're in a difficult situation. So there's that side of AI. It takes a lot of depends on our water, and they're moving to Canada to use our water in an agricultural land, and then after the water is all gone, I guess, well, I have a nephew. He said he depends on his well water. They get well water. He's saying, how is it going to affect the water table? Because it uses massive amounts of water.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It uses up so much resources. One thing I would also mention is that sometimes these data centers are also been built on ancestral lands, and then that kind of disrupts, you know, whoever is living on those lands, you know, that indigenous folks. So that also comes into play in terms of who is being affected, you know. And then, of course, you know, once they deplete the resources, you know, they keep moving on.
They'll just move to another area.
They'll just move on to another area.
Okay, so that's a very good point. I'm not technically savvy on these things because I believe I'm one of the only people around that does not have a cell phone. So I do not depend on this sort of, you know, just have a phone or that sort of thing. But I understand from what I was reading that, that AI does deplete resources. And also, I understand from what I was reading that AI does not always tell the truth. Basically, what I'm saying is AI may give false information, and who is to know? Like, is this some kind of God out there that knows everything? How do we know that what AI is saying is truthful? Do you have any sense of the accuracy of the information that you're getting from AI?
Yeah, I have an idea. You know, AI is man-made, first of all. You know, so it's limited, you know, in terms of the content that it can provide, right? So AI pretty much, you know, pulls from what is already existing, you know, and just, in my opinion, makes that information easily available. Mm-hmm. And to people, So that's what I have to say. You know, AI is definitely flawed, especially if you are trying to use it for research. You know,
You say it's flawed if you
I think it's flawed. You know, especially if. You try to copy everything from AI, you know, let's say, for example, you know, you use one of the features of AI is to, like, summarize a paper or to write you a paper, you know, and say it does, right? The paper's citations might not always be correct or accurate. You know, when you do go down the rabbit hole of doing your annotated bibliographies, or, you know, trying to really find where the source came from, you'll find it leads you to a whole other area. And that's the problem there. I feel many students get flagged for plagiarism, and because they have used AI in that way. You know, there is a way of using AI to benefit you or to amplify the work that you are doing, right? But if you are choosing to copy everything from AI, you kind of also lose your originality, right? That whole creativeness that humans are able to put into the work kind of goes away, you know? So, in summary, AI is flawed. You know, even in the pictures that it created, there were those initial flaws, you know, having too many fingers or having a crooked smile. Although AI has gotten better, and, you know, sometimes you don't even realize the difference, right? So you might be looking at the picture, right? You compare the original to the AI produced, and it's pretty much the same. So AI has come a long way in terms of its accuracy, you know, but there's still hints of imperfection in the air.
You're listening to CKOW 95.9 FM, and this Ugona Chibo is my co-host this morning, and we're discussing AI. And that's very interesting that this is a sort of a technique or something that is being developed and improved, and so is going through all these glitches and so on. And it just makes, I don't know, I feel uneasy about it a little bit. I mean, of course, you know.
Yeah, I think it's easy to feel uneasy, you know. It's kind of weird, you know, how quickly AI has become a norm, mm-hmm. you know. It's kind of weird, especially for someone like yourself who doesn't really use technology. Right, AI is a whole different world, you know. But for the new generation, you know, AI is second nature, and it's relied on literally for everything.
Yeah, so the land that they're going to be taking to make this development, and we have to remember that Canadians have not been consulted. There's improper consultation. Somebody that lives on this particular property or lives across the road from where that data center is going to be has started a petition. And so there is some, you know, protest about this. But this land is just north of the community of Ildishane, and Climate Action Team, is a coalition of environmental groups and grassroots organizations in the province, and they published a report outlining the threats of the AI data centers. And so this is, I got this information from the Uniter. And according to James Wilt, who is the he's one of the staff there, he says he's the policy manager of the center, of the policy manager. I just have to make sure of Climate Action Team Manitoba. He states that he says that it seems that the potential benefits are few and short-lived. He says, as with any sort of large-scale infrastructure projects, the construction of data center will create large numbers of design, engineering, and construction jobs. But he says, I think what has to be kept in mind is that this is true of any infrastructure project, and so if the government decides to invest in something like energy efficiency, that will create a lot of jobs. But the problem comes from a lack of long-term sustainable jobs. He says a data center could create 500 to 100 jobs, which isn't nothing. But he says that when we compare those numbers to larger employers in Manitoba, or what we know could be created with alternative investments, they really are not significant at all. So there's a lot of concerns about this. And he says one of the big differences between AI data center and conventional data centers is just in terms of their electricity consumption due to the complexity of training and inference models. It creates an immense energy demand, which is what you were saying. James Wilt suspects the proposed Ildesheim project would be closer to using 300 to 500 megawatts, as indicated by similar proposals in other provinces. And so that could put electrical consumption of this data center roughly equivalent to every householder in Winnipeg combined. So as the province faces a looming electricity crisis, James Wilt says that these large loads being added to the grid by AI data centers represents electricity that can't be used for what would we argue would be more beneficial social goods. So the petition that has been sent, developed by Christy Little, has already, at the time of that this article was written, has more than 7,000 signatures. And they're saying that this, having this data center right in your community, will be disruptive to the community, to the lives of residents. There's the anticipated air pollution from turbines and backup generators. There is constant noise pollution from the humming of the 24 hours, 7 days a week facility operations. And light pollution will drastically disrupt our daily lives. This is what Christy Little says. So she was the one that is circulating a petition. So according to jet.ai's website, and this is from Las Vegas, they seem to be advancing towards phase 3 of the development plan for Ildesheim, pre-leasing and construction. The intentionally vague language says, quote, "With powered, shovel-ready sites, engage hyperscalers and developers for pre-leasing. Construction begins only after tenants are secured, which makes it incredibly difficult to ascertain exactly how official the project is." Scott Powell, who is the director, Director of Corporate Communications and Marketing for Manitoba Hydro, says the Crown-owned corporation cannot comment on prospective projects. In an email to the Uniter, Powell says recent legislation now gives the Manitoba government the power to rank projects in terms of priority prior to going through Manitoba Hydro. And currently, the priority from our Legislative Assembly seems to be AI. Last fall, Premier Wap Kanu endorsed a call for more data centers in the province in front of the Manitoba Chamber of Commerce. As well, the federal government is spending $2.3 million to support artificial intelligence innovation in Manitoba, most of it to be distributed through New Media Manitoba in various capacities for job creation. Although the lasting employment opportunities for anti-human technologies remain to be seen. So, given the language used in the provincial 2026 budget, as well as a report from the Innovation and Productivity Task Force published last year, the provincial government seems set on establishing what they call digital sovereignty. These are some of the things that are being discussed, and there are people that are living out in Ildishane that are not happy about this, and for instance, the heavy use of water is going to be a very serious situation once they move away. They're going to be moving away. These people that started will move away. And then the people in the area will be left with no groundwater and things like that. So this is a real serious issue.
Yeah. It's a really serious issue, you know. I mean, I always think about how scarce water is right now, you know, especially for our indigenous brothers and sisters. And then, you know, to have this data center, you know, pretty much just disrupts all of that. You know, we should be focusing on, you know, providing water, providing resources, or allocating the monies to elsewhere or to different other projects.
Yeah. Maybe we could have a little song break.
Before
we go on.
I believe you wanted Three Little Birds.
Okay, yes.
Get started with Three Little Birds by Bob Marley.
Okay. Bob Marley.
Bob Marley, Three Little Birds.
A great singer.
Singing, don't worry about a thing.
You just listened to Bob Marley and the Wailers, the Three Little Birds, right here on Wooden Spoon CKW 95.9 FM. I don't know if you all know, but Wooden Spoons is hosting a garden party. So Mary Jane's Cooking School is hosting a garden party on Saturday, May the 23rd, from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m.
5 p.m. 11 to 5.
11 to 5. 11 to 5. Thank you, Mary Jane. That's at 252 Arlington.
In the back lane.
In the back lane. So come on down. There are going to be some vendors, some really good food, live entertainment. It's gonna be a good time, you know. This is the sixth.
It's the 16th annual garden party.
16th annual garden party. So come on down, spread some cheer, donate to a good cause. You know, there's so many wonderful vendors that would be present as well. So we look forward to seeing you there. A couple of folks from Fantastic Friday, the previous show, would also be there. So, yeah, coming out May 23rd. And if it's raining that day, the rainy date is Sunday, May 24th.
Yes, well, we have never used a rainy date yet, so hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
I think there was one time that we had a rainy date, and that was, it was the time when I had this accident. I had surgery and all that stuff.
Oh, no.
Remember? And then I attended on a Sunday. Hmm. They had quite the time. They were, I think, a number of things were going awry. But anyways, this year we're back on track, and so this is our 16th garden party.
Amazing.
Yeah, you know, I don't know where all the time has gone. It just,
yeah, time just keeps on flying by.
Yeah. And then Rico John has always been involved with providing music, and yeah, he, and Jira accompanies him on the drums, and he's always our first singer.
Yeah.
To lead the crew.
To lead the crowd to get it started. Hopefully he has received an invite. You know, I know he was mentioning, oh, I need another personal invite. And so hopefully he can receive all the invitations necessary. But yes, there'll be live entertainment. And anyone else performing that day?
You know what? I'm not involved with that. I mean, Indira is involved with getting the entertainers. Mm-hmm. And she's going to be the MC, I believe.
Yeah.
And I know Rico has always been one of the first entertainers that... Yeah, and we sell food for people, and people can enjoy the music, gather together, and just have a good time. And I believe that it seems to me sometimes they dance at this garden party. Well, I don't, maybe I'm getting mixed up with something else.
Yeah, I mean, wherever there's music, you are allowed to dance.
Yeah.
You know, mix, mingle. I know a couple of years there have been raffles, you know, so prizes,
that's right,
to be
and
won.
We're having that again. As
nice.
Yes, thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what we have to do before then is we go around the neighborhood in that particular area. We give everybody notification that we are closing the back lane. And our neighbor across from us has always been very generous in allowing us to use the back lane. So we use that whole back lane. We close off the street on that back lane.
Oh, nice.
And it's always worked out. So keeping our fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Oh, and we've always had good weather except that one time. So this is quite fantastic.
Awesome.
To have good weather.
Well, once again, folks, it's happening on May 23rd, 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. at 252 Arlington Street.
Thank you for mentioning that, Yugana. So, I'm just getting back to the topic at hand a little bit. I guess the I'm just going to mention a few things that the Climate Action Team report has also referred to the United States-based Electric Power Research Institute and, quote, the electric consumption rate as being roughly 800,000 households. That's what this is, how much their electricity they're going to be consuming. So there could be a looming. I'm going to be hopefully interviewing somebody from Ile de Chine next week, who is going to be impacted by that. The people there are very concerned. There is another person, Matt Howard, who lives there, and his yard is enveloped by the proposed data center site. And he has lived in this place for the past 10 years and is opposed to the center going up, is concerned about the adverse effects of the project on his family and community. And as of Tuesday, March 31st, he has stated, "We haven't even had a province-wide discussion on the need for the knowledge of AI," he says. "It's kind of being force-fed onto us as opposed to actually debating whether this is something that we need in our province. And when it comes to assessing the value of the projects like this," James Wilt states, "that it seems the potential benefits are few and short-lived." And so I know that my nephew has tried to contact Bob Canoe, the premier of Manitoba, has not gotten a response. And of course, being the premier, these leaders are very vulnerable to the influence of anything that creates employment. And so they're not particularly, wise to what's going on, put it that way. They're pretty short-term in their thinking, I would presume.
Yeah. Pretty short-term in their thinking.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to just provide a little bit of information, taking another approach here. These are health recommendations. And organic food bites. This comes from the United States. They provide information on how to reduce microplastics in your food. And this is the Environmental Working Group that has said that while scientists are still uncovering information about microplastics and their potential to affect human health, one thing is certain: they're making their ways into our bodies. The Environmental Working Group recently reviewed the ways that microplastics are getting consumed through food, and we've got 5 tips to cut down on your exposure. And some of the findings may be surprising. Ultra-processed foods typically contain higher levels of plastics than less processed food. So the Mary Jane's Cooking School is a nonprofit organization in Manitoba, and our focus is always on whole foods as opposed to processed foods. And so this sort of supports that mandate when you realize that a lot of microplastics are in our food. Microplastics can contaminate food through a large range of production, processing, cooking, and preparation methods. Think of bits of plastic from conveyor belts, tubes, and packaging that could end up in what you eat. Studies also show that food workers' personal protective equipment, such as hair nets, aprons, and gloves, can shed particles that get into food during production. Most ingredients in ultra-processed foods are produced through industrial processes. The more stages of processing food goes through, the more opportunities for microplastics to sneak in. And the plastic problem isn't going to be solved overnight. So this is just some information that we should be try to curtail the amount of processed foods that we eat, and we should really be more diligent about preparing our own food. And I guess we're in a fast food nation. Everybody likes to have things that are fast and easy. And this may not be the best choice for us, for sure, in terms of health. And health not only for our bodies, but health for the environment. And so I know there's a lot of windy days these days, and in the last few days, I've been picking up plastic and paper and all kinds of stuff that is blowing through our yard, like at the school and at home. And I'm picking up an awful lot of plastics. And so then I have to throw them in the garbage. I'm not sure what happens to plastic in the landfills. They do not decompose, I guess, for a long time. So, you know, it's just a concern that we are really not, we are eating too many processed foods and utilizing plastics too much. So that is just one of the things that the Organic Consumers Association from the United States, that they provide information on healthful ways of living. Another thing I wanted to share from the Organic Consumers Association before I get to end with a recipe, and maybe we could have another song as well. It says agricultural soils exposed to glyphosate may be unexpected breeding ground for hospital superbugs. Now, glyphosate is something that Monsanto, which is now sold to Bayer, they put in their crops, genetically modified organisms. There has always been a huge controversy about Monsanto's crops. It's been very disconcerting to know that Health Canada did not demand to see the data, to see what the research was regarding the use of glyphosates. Health Canada is very it's very vulnerable to corporate interests, and the pressure by Monsanto, etc., has allowed them to escape escape being tested. Everything that's being put on the market should be tested, but Monsanto's pesticides or whatever they use has never been tested. They use certain pesticides on their crops. So this is a very serious flaw. And John F. Kennedy Jr., the son of Robert Kennedy Sr., who passed away, he has been taking in data about all these things. He's taken in vaccine data and has been monitoring all these things. And he changed from being a Democrat to a Republican. And I believe it had to do with the fact that the Republicans were allowing him to go forward with his proposal to test these things. His aim was to test the glyphosate, the crops that were grown by Monsanto, to test for glyphosate and the effects of glyphosate. And so this was the first time that he's demanded accountability from a very powerful corporation. As we know, Monsanto was extremely powerful. It was very much involved with making napalm bombs in the war in Vietnam. That's where they made a lot of money. Then they turned to agriculture, and they also added harmful things in the food, in all the grains. So John Kennedy Sr., I mean Junior, he wanted to have these tested, and this was going through until just recently. The Trump government decided that, well, the Trump government doesn't care about health, as we know. The Trump government only cares about profit. So now they don't have to have testing on the glyphosate. So that's a real stun. I mean, would be a very disappointing thing for John Kennedy Jr. to have to deal with, because he's always wanted to study the effects of different things. He did a lot of studies, research on vaccines, showing the vaccines, some of them that were harmful, that were not being recognized as being harmful, and things like that. There have been people that have been harmed by vaccines, and this is another issue that has always been covered up. Anyway, so that's just a mention of that. So apparently glyphosate may be an unexpected breeding ground for superbugs. Apparently that every year, antimicrobial resistance is responsible for an estimated 1.1 to 1.4 million deaths worldwide. Now, scientists have found evidence that the spread of the antimicrobial resistance isn't always driven by bacteria evolving to resist the antibiotics themselves. Rather, weed killers can have the same effect, and these weed killers would be glyphosate. Here we show the most common species of drug-resistant bacteria from hospitals are not only resistant to multiple antibiotic classes, but they have high concentrations of the weed killer glyphosate, said Dr. Daniel Centron, a researcher at the Institute of Medical Microbiology and Parasitology in Buenos Aires and the senior author of the study in Frontiers in Microbiologies. These results suggest that weed killers, which, unlike antibiotics, are widely applied in agricultural environments, may have the unintended side effect of selecting antimicrobial resistance among bacterial communities within the soil. So this is what the Organic Consumer Association has stated, and it's be unfortunate that they are recognized, that they are allowed to do this. I guess I could have share a recipe. I would love to hear another song.
Yeah,
have a little break, and then I have a recipe. And
we do have about 6 minutes.
Okay.
Before democracy now. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Do you want that one? And
sure, why not?
Yeah, we could play that one.
We're talking about that right now.
Right. Yeah, we could play that one just for a little bit. And then we can come on back. You're still listening to CKW 95.9 FM. Still with the Spoons.
Okay. We'll have people share a recipe. That was so much for the good and the bad and the ugly. Okay, this is a carrot cashew casserole, and it calls for 2 medium onions chopped and 2 garlic cloves chopped and 1 tablespoon of olive oil and 4 medium carrots grated, 1.5 cups of cashew nuts, a bit expensive, but, and 2 cups of whole wheat breadcrumbs, 1 tablespoon of tahini, which is a sesame seed paste, 1.5 teaspoons of caraway seeds, 1 tablespoon of tamari soy sauce or another type of soy sauce, whatever you have. Tamari is a good brand. A half a teaspoon of lemon juice or 2 tablespoons of red wine vinegar. I'm not sure about the lemon. I think maybe a bit more lemon. And 5 tablespoons of water, salt, and freshly ground pepper. And what you do, you preheat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, and you sweat the onion and garlic in oil until soft. You're just cooking it gently. And then in a large bowl, you mix all the ingredients and add salt and pepper to taste. The mixture should come together into a mass when pressed. Press firmly into a greased loaf pan, 6.5 by 3 3/4 by 3 inch loaf pan, you know, your regular size loaf pan, and cover with foil. Bake for 1 hour. Remove the foil and bake 10 minutes more. Rest for 10 minutes in the pan before unmolding. And you can serve this with a green salad and a mushroom sauce. This is a very delicious and nice type of vegetarian vegan recipe. So I guess we've come to the end of Wooden Spoons once again. And thank you for listening. And thank you, Ugana, for being the co-host this morning while John is on vacation or someplace.
Oh, for sure. John would be back before we know it. And yeah, you have been listening to Wooden Spoons, sponsored by Mary Jane's Cooking School. On CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. For our podcast, please go to ckuw.ca. Today's program will be up in a couple of hours. Until next time, this is Ugona Chibo and
Mary Jane Eason
saying bye for now, and thanks for listening.